Today's Mishnah in Masechet Idiot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is Perek Gimel, Mishnah Hey. So we've been talking about the various machlokesin with Reb Dusa ben Urkanes and the Chachomim, and here's yet another one. So here the question is about a slingshot. Now remember that in those days the slingshot wasn't elastic. What it was essentially, and it's important to know how it worked. So the kela that David HaMelech used, where Barnea was yesterday, I'm assuming, is that where you were yesterday? In the
I was near there, but David Wilner and I bought a slingshot from a kid at the foot of Mount Ararat, made from strings. Couldn't resist.
Do you have it to show for?
I don't know where it is now. I don't know. It's from 20 years ago.
It was a stone's throw away.
Very good. Very good.
Okay, so what the slingshot, the way the slingshot worked for David HaMelech was that there was, it's a little pad of leather or of cloth with two holes, one on each side. On one side, there's a string that loops around your finger. And on the other hand, there's the string that has a little holder at the end that you can hold on to. What you do is you hold this in your hand, swing it around your head, let go of the one that's not looped, which allows the stone, because of the inertia that you've been whirling, it now flies out of the kaf, which is the Beit Kibbol, which would make it into a kli, and if you can do it at exactly the right second, it gets Goliath right in the forehead and kills him. So this is quite a powerful weapon. And the question is, what is the din legabe tuma? So, kela shebet kibol shela arug. So if the Beit Kibbol part, which is the place where you put the stone, if it's woven, then there's no question. It's definitely Tmei'ah, because that has din of a beged that has a specific purpose and therefore should be considered to be a kli. The problem is if it's made out of or. So if it's made out of leather, so then the question is, does it have a shear? Because the shear of leather is usually chamishat fachim by chamishat fachim. Because we're talking about leather to be used as a kli, that's useful. Now, the thing is that Rabbi Dosa ben Urkanes' shita is that something that is not a base kibbol, so that over here we're talking about that which is the cuff that you put the stone into, it's not really meant to hold the stone at all. It's only meant to provide the backdrop against which you can swirl that stone around, and actually that's what keeps it in. Obviously it's the pressing of the centrifugal force against the stone, but it's not a normal Beit Kibbol where the gravity is going to be able to keep it in there. It's not meant for that, and that, says Reb Dosa ben Urkanes, is not called a Beit Kibbol. So if it's not a Beit Kibbol, if you substitute a centrifugal force for gravity, even though essentially in terms of the inertial implications, it's the same, it doesn't fit the concept of a Beit Kibbol. So you're left with the shaila of whether it's a shear of raw leather that would be shaykh to being a beged, but that is much larger than would ever be in the part of the kaf that is meant for throwing a stone. And therefore, if it's made out of or, according to Reb Dosa ben Urkanes, there's no way that it could be Mekabel Tuma, because a little piece of or is not, unless it's literally a kli, but it's not, because it has no Beit Kibbol. And therefore, you do not have a kli here at all. Whereas the Chachonim say, not so. They don't make this distinction between gravity and between centrifugal force. And therefore, according to the Chachonim, they say it's exactly the same. And it's Tmei'a, because as long as it's going to be in there and you're using it to whirl it around your head, that is considered also to be a kli and doesn't require chamisha al chamisha. Nifsak Beta Etzba Shala. Now, the Beta Etzba is the loop. That's the thing that when you let go of the handle, you want to make sure you don't let go of the whole thing, because then obviously you lose everything. The loop keeps that one side up against your finger so that when you release the string, which has a little holder at the end, so that it doesn't slip out until you're ready for the exact instant that you let go of the string, so that the loop itself, if that ends up nifsak, if that breaks off, then you can't use it at all, because you can't just hold onto it, because when you release one, it's going to pull the other one out of your finger. So if it's nifsak by that special up, then it's broken, and it's not considered to be a kli. But if nifsak beta pakia shela, the beta pakia is the little thickening handle that you put a little piece of plastic on the end of the part that you hold. That's just to make the hold more secure, obviously. I mean, you could hold the string by pressing tight against the string. You don't really need the beta pakia. And therefore, if the beta pakia breaks off, it's still going to be makabo tuma. Mishnah Vav in Perek Gimel of Idyot. We're still, believe it or not, in the sixth Mishnah, we are still in the middle of, the end, actually, of the machlokas between Rav Dosa ben Hurkanes and the Chachamim. So remember that in a case where a woman is allowed to be Ocheles Betruma, she could be married to a Kohen, she could be a Kohenet herself, the daughter of a Kohen. If she was a shvuya, and we have any chashash that maybe she actually had relations with the goyim who had captured her, so then she would be asura to be ocheles betruma, because they are mechalal, or they turn her into a zona if she ends up having sex with a goy. So in this case, the question is, do we have to be choshed that if she was captured, that she was also actually penetrated by them? So hashvuya ochelet betruma divi Rebbe Dosa. Rebbe Dosa ben Hurkanes holds that since she has a cheskas kashrus for her truma, and he holds that we do not assume that the goyim are going to rape her when they have her as a shvuya. After all, they want to get good money when they sell her back to you, as kidnappers do. So they want her to be in tip-top shape. Therefore, we don't have to be choshesh that they raped her. So it says Rabbi Yosef, it depends. There are times when a shvuya could eat truma, but there are other times where she definitely cannot. Yeshvuya uchelet, v'yeshvuya she'eno uchelet. Ketzad? So how would it be possible, if you're telling me that we have to be cheshesh that she was raped, how would it be that it was kosher to her to eat truma? How would that truma be kosher for her? That would be a case where she was the one who said, she comes into Beis Din, and she says, Nishbeti, I was captured, but I remain tahora. So since we have over there the most powerful of migot, hapesha asar hu hapesha yitir, our only source of knowledge of the fact that she was captured at all is the fact that she told us that that's what happened. If she hadn't said anything, we never would have considered the possibility that this woman, Stam, walking around in the street was raped, and therefore she can be ochelet based on that migul. But if Edim come and Edim say that she was nishpeit, then according to the Chachamim, even if she says to Horani, eina ochelet, because we don't have a migul, and we do have the chashash that they actually would have raped her. Mishnah Zion already begins the next chelek of our perek. So we are now completed all of the various machlokas between Rav Dosa ben Hurkanes and the Chachamim, and we continue now with the machlokas between Rabbi Yeshua and the Chachamim, which this is a machlokas that we had back in Masechet Tiras. And these were the four cases that are interesting cases because they involve both a Rishus HaYochid and a Rishus HaRabim. The question is, what element of the Suffolk do we look at in determining whether this is a Suffolk Tumah Rishus HaRabim, which is Tahar, or a Suffolk Tumah Rishus HaYachid, which is Tumah? So there were four different Sveikos, where all of which Rabbi Yoshua is Metame, and he considers it to be a Suffolk Tumah Rishus HaYachid, and the Chachamim are Metaher. Ketzah. So what are these cases? So let's take this case. A person who is a mitzora, when it says in this case hatameh, it's referring to a mitzora, as we'll see. So remember that we have a very special din of tumas tzaras that is similar to a case of tumas oihel with tumas meis, but it's not really the same. The tuma of a tzaras is a tuma that is called bia. It means haba el habayit, someone who comes into the house where there's a mitzora. But over there, it's not like meis, where if a mitzora happens to pass by and you're under the same roof or the same board as a mitzora, then it would be metame you the way that tumas meis is metame. Absolutely not. It has to be the bias of the mitzora. So in order to establish it as the bias of the mitzora has to be standing still. If the mitzora is standing still, then it's the bias. And then if the person who is tar walks under the same roof, so then he would become tame as abba el habay. Now, suppose we have the mitzora standing under some type of a tree, a roof, and this was in a rishus hayochid, and someone who is tar, he walks by, and we're not quite sure what the situation was. We don't know whether the tar who was walking by in the street next to it, did he actually look for a moment and pass underneath the tree in which he was with that mitzora? We're not sure. So he might have possibly come together with the mitzora. We'll see at the end of the list of cases that this includes cases in which maybe he touched the mitzora, even if we know that he wasn't under the roof with the mitzora, or maybe he was nosei the mitzora. Okay, this the Mishnah will explain that we don't mean only to question the shaila about tumas bia. That was question number one. How about the opposite case? A tohar was standing under the roof, and he was still, and a mitzora passes by, and we don't know whether the mitzora actually stood under that same roof, or maybe, again, we'll see, maybe he came into contact with them or was moved. The third case is, if there's tuma in Rishus HaYochid, and there's the same tuma thing that is tahor in the Rishus HaRabim. So we don't know whether the dover that was tame in the Rishus HaYochid had come in contact with the Torah in the Rishus HaRabim. Or vice versa. We had something Torah in Rishus HaYachid, the Tumas Rishus HaRabim, and we don't know whether they came in contact with each other, that the Dover Tameh came into that Rishus HaYachid or not. So in all of these cases, we're partially something's in Rishus HaRabim, partially it's in Rishus HaYachid. We're not quite sure what it is that took place. And what took place could have given Tuma in different ways. Maybe Safik Naga, Safik Lo Naga. We're not sure whether it was actual physical contact. Safik Heil, Safik Lo Heil, meaning Ohel in the sense of via of a mitzera. We don't know whether he had stood still, whether he had even entered under the same area. Safik Heisit, maybe he moved it, because moving would also be metamein. Safik Loesit, in all of these cases, Rabbi Yoshua says that since it might have been that this became Tamei in Rishus HaYachid, so then even though the Safik involves also Rishus HaRabim, if the Mokum of the Tumah might have been Rishus HaYachid, it becomes a Safik Tumah Rishus HaYachid, whereas the Chachamim are Metayer. So the Pashtus is their Metayer. In general, the Rav has an approach that the Chachamim hold specifically that the din of Suffolk Tumen Brisa Yochid doesn't apply to Tsaras. All right, I'm not quite certain where that comes from. But the Pashtus is that these are all Tzfekas in which it's not clear whether we call it a Suffolk Tumen Brisa Yochid or a Suffolk Tuma Brisa Sarabim, and that is good for the Machlokas between the Chachomim and Rabbi Yoshua. Okay, Rabosai, that concludes our exciting foray into the dinim of Tumah v'Taira here in Idyos, dinim of Achilas Truma, dinim of Chashash, of Psul by Achilas Truma too. Meanwhile, once again, I mention the Lias Neshama of Rosh Hashiva, Rav Ruderman Zatzal, Rav Yaakov Yitzchak, and Rav Yehuda Leib Halevi. Kol tov, everybody.